Hey everybody, welcome. Please
Welcome,
put in the
everyone.
chat. But I thought you want to go ahead. You want to?
No, you can go. I just want to say hello as well.
Hey everybody, put in the chat where you're at, please. I love to shout out, see places I've been, places I want to go to. Tell us where you are. I'll start you off.
Yeah, where are you, Tony?
Emerald Isle, North Carolina. I live on a beach. Where's everybody at? Where are you, please?
And how's the weather down there?
Oh, I can only speak to the organizers and panelists. Organizers? I put it in the chat, but I think it only went to the organizers and the panelists. So where?
In the questions box. Sorry. Open your questions box.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't know you were going to be typing it. But we have... And I'm going to put my glasses on. We have James from Denver and Heather from Pennsylvania and Sam from Greenville, South Carolina. A little closer
cool.
to you.
Where do you see all those folks? I don't see them. Oh, sure.
Sorry. There's something called the questions box, and if you expand it, you will see that.
I did expand it. And it's just blank. Folks, let us know where you are, even though I can't see it.
Stephanie is from Erie, Pennsylvania, and it is sunny there. Good.
And Erie, not too far from Pittsburgh. I went to school at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh.
You did go to Carnegie
too far Mellon. Not too far from Erie. I cannot see the question. I expanded my question.
I'm going to be dealing with that during the webinar, right?
Right, of course, but I wanted to see where folks are from.
I'm not sure why you're not seeing it in your questions box.
I opened up the little triangle, the questions box.
Yes.
Question, I don't see anything. It's all blank. Well, let Brian know and he can read them out.
I'm reading them out, Tony. So, we have two people in rainy California along with me, Nicole and Kathy. Nicole's in LA. I'm in the desert, so it's actually a little better. We didn't get the deluge you got on the coast. Nina is from St. Joseph, Minnesota.
Welcome, Minnesota. Welcome, Nina. Minnesota, wonderful.
Yes. So, people are starting to come on, and we will...
Who else is with us? From where? I can't see
it. It's also from Minneapolis. Go Minneapolis.
All right, two from Minnesota. Wonderful.
Yes, absolutely. And, And you know what? Tell us what hat you're wearing. What hat are you wearing? Are you calling in as a director of development, a development officer, an executive director, a board member, a plan giving officer? What hat are you wearing today?
Yeah, sure, that too.
Yeah, board member. Heather says all the hats. So smaller.
One person shop for Heather.
Yeah.
She's the CEO. She's the fundraiser.
Jody, development director, Pets Lifeline in Sonoma, California. Another Californian.
Ooh, maybe Sonoma. I want to go to Sonoma so badly.
Maybe we're all on today because it's so rainy. No one's outside.
There's a very good winery, Sonoma. Ridge. They produce a very good red Zinfandel. I don't know if you know Ridge in Sonoma. I know there's hundreds of wineries in Sonoma. I know that. So. You may not know Ridge, but I've become a fan of Ridge.
I see. We have Nina, Director of Development and Plan Giving Specialist. So Nina might have some input for us, which would be great. Tiffany is from Texas. She's a board member. So great that Jan is on as a board member.
Tiffany in Texas. Texas, Tiffany's a big state. Where in Texas, Tiffany? Please, you can't. That's like saying California or, you can't get away with that. Where in Texas?
Yes, and Kathy is looking forward to starting a plan giving program. Great. Jody said she loves Ridge, so she knows that. You can talk.
Oh, awesome. The Ridge Zinfandel. I'm about to buy some Paso's Red Zin. Paso, and the other one is Lytton Spring, I think, is another good one.
Really? I got to say.
Okay, sorry, but yes.
Yeah, past Rianiti, you've sort of lost me.
Matus.
I am very low scale when it comes to wine. Let's see. Bob is.
Make sure I don't spend more than $9 on a bottle when we're drinking together.
He's the executive. He's an executive director. We have a number of EDs on today. Other
wonderful.
there's lots of people joining, so we won't be able to read it all out.
All right. And I'm sorry I can't see them. Go to webinar.
Tiffany's okay. North San Antonio. Jody said, send me your email and I'll send you recommendations for Zen. Tony will be sending you all an email, so you'll have it, Jody, and you can then correspond with him. Stephanie is a development coordinator. Wonderful. We're going to wait just one more minute. You can see on the screen now, we're giving you some of the, what do we want to say, housekeeping. So make sure you've got that questions box open. I will be looking at the questions box during the webinar. I'll mention that again after we start, but please use it if you've got any questions or any technical issues or anything. Kelsey is development officer. Kelly is with Friday Harbor, is in Washington, as a director of development. And so everyone is coming on. We've got a lot of you, hundreds of you signed up today, and it's 12:02. So you know what? We are going to start.
12:02 in California.
So yes, 12:02 in California. Yes. I think a lot of you know me. I'm Brian Saber. I'm the president of Asking Matters, a lifelong asker, and someone very interested in planned giving and very admiring of our guest today. Some of you will know Tony from other presentations here. He's become an important peer and a friend. I've learned a lot about planned giving from him. He is passionate about it. You may know him from his radio program. You may know him, you may have heard him speak. If anyone here is with the YMCA, let us know if you're with a Y. Tony is going to be at the NATO, the National Association of Y Development Officers Conference in April in Denver. I think a few of you said you're from Denver. He and I are both speaking there, so you'd have an opportunity. Tony is an expert. This is an important topic. I want to say one more thing before passing on to, well, let me say two things. One, you will get a PDF of the slides from Tony and some other materials after this. You'll get a link to the recording from us by tomorrow. And of course, you can reach out to us at any time. If you have questions, please type them in the chat box. I'll take them when I can. I'm watching it for Tony since there are so many of you today. And if not, we'll certainly leave time at the end. The webinar is 45 minutes, but Tony said he's happy to stay on if there are more questions than that. I just want to put out there, I've worked for lots of small organizations. Only once did I actually work for a very large organization that had planned giving expertise. And so I had to start from scratch on planned giving, and I think it can feel overwhelming, but I saw the reward of it, and I'm a big believer in it. And Tony will talk about all the reasons why it is doable, important, and can be a great source of revenue. So without further ado, I'm going to pass it on to Tony. Oops. And let me see. I need to give him my screen. Okay, there you go, Tony. Hopefully you can see that and you can take over. I'm going to take my face off screen and hand it to Tony. And we look forward to a great webinar.
Thank you, Brian. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for coming. Very glad to have you all with us, each of you, each and every one, from Texas to California to Minnesota to South Carolina. We get the four quadrants. I saw on Twitter, X, the average attention span there is 9 seconds. And I thought, that's just enough time for my mother to create guilt. I'm coming over for dinner. Can't you stay for the night? I'm coming to stay for the night. Can't you stay the weekend? I'm coming to stay the weekend. Take me on a cruise. I'm taking you on a cruise. Can't you move back home? I'm moving back home. Let's get cemetery plots. So I heard Brian chuckle. I hope a couple of others do. Right. So, you know, on its face, right? That's a story about some motherly guilt. Some of you may have had that imposed upon you through the years. Maybe depending on your age, you may have imposed it. Of course, no mother never ever does that. So no mother here has ever done that to their children. But those of you who may be children, that's probably a large percentage of you are children, are children of someone, and you may have had that guilt imposed upon you. But if we go to the next level, it's about a deeper relationship. And I tie this into what we're doing today because planned giving will give you much deeper relationships with lots and lots of your donors. When you start talking about this with your folks, they're going to open up and you're going to enjoy those deeper relationships through planned giving. So here's what we're going to talk about, a little what and why of planned giving, so we're all on the same page and get started. Who the best prospects are? Do you want to be talking to the right people so that you can enjoy these deeper relationships and make the conversation simple by talking to the right people? How to get started? Got a little surprise there for you all and for Brian too on how to get started. A little tease there. Some marketing ideas. Continuing ed, if you want to go deeper in planned giving, got some strategies, suggestions there. The all-important Q&A, and I would urge you, as Brian did, to put your questions into the questions block. Please do. Brian will be curating those for us. And I've got a little bonus, if you're Gen Z, Gen X, or Millennial, about talking about planned giving with folks who are older, your parents' ages. Your grandparents' ages, perhaps. So if anybody out there has that concern about talking to older folks about planned giving, you've got a special bonus for you. So what and why? Just make sure everybody, as I said, is on the starting at the same level. When folks are thinking about whether to make a planned gift to you, to your nonprofit, they are considering how you fit within their long-term plans, their retirement plans, their estate plans, and we'll be talking specifically today about the estate plan, how you fit into their long-term plans. And what that means is how you fit alongside the donor's wife, husband, partner, children, grandchildren, and sometimes dear friends are in our long-term plans. How does your work, your nonprofit, fit right alongside those dear loved ones? That's important. So serious considerations go into whether to make a planned gift. And for today, the planned gift that we're going to focus on the most, these are gifts of cash to your nonprofit at the donor's death. And I do use the word death. I don't say passed on. Slipped the surly bonds, you know, left us, you know, I don't think death is a bad word. It's not a death conversation. You're going to find that out. But when someone dies, it's their death. So these are gifts of cash, long-term. Of course, this is long-term fundraising because they're gifts of cash to your nonprofit when the donor has died. And why do this? You're all here, so you've got at least a threshold interest in planned giving. Why do this? And as I'm asking the question or going through the question why, we have a poll. So Brian, if you would launch that poll about everybody's comfort level in planned giving. And as we're doing the poll, I will talk through sustainability. The importance of planned giving is to help your sustainability, your long-term survivability, because these are long-term gifts. This is not going to pay next year's capital plan or the five-year capital plan, or it's not going to keep the rent paid. These are long-term gifts, all promoting your sustainability. Specifically, how do planned gifts do that? And the specific gift we're going to be talking about is gifts in people's wills. How do those gifts do that? Through endowment growth, building your endowment. Even if you're starting at zero, if you have no endowment, the biggest charities you can name in the country. So where do we hit? So let's do the biggest ones. Texas, University of Texas, University of California, University of South Carolina and Minnesota, University of Minnesota. Why not? The biggest universities, some of the biggest universities in the country, right? At one point, they and all the other huge nonprofits with their billion-dollar endowments had zero, zero. They all started with nothing at one time. So not to be dismayed by that. You can launch your endowment, and planned giving will help you do that. Or if you have an endowment, but it needs to be larger, planned giving can help you grow that endowment. So that's the what and the why. And who's quite comfortable? 4%. All right, that's small. So 96%, not quite comfortable. Somewhat. I like to talk to donors about it. I talk to donors about it, 18, so almost 20%. All right. So that's 22% quite comfortable or somewhat comfortable. And then the other 78%, a little comfortable, but not talking to donors. That's just half, not comfortable at all. 22, and it scares the crap out of me. I admire the 8% who said, willing to admit, it scares the crap out of you. Thank you to those 8%. I admire that honesty. And I think I can help all of you in terms of a refresher for the small percentage that are very quite comfortable. And for the other 92% or so, I think I've got some advice for you. This is what we're not going to be talking about. And this is what I consider not even to be planned giving at the stage that we're all at. All right. I took this right out of the tax code. I don't know. I didn't even have to go looking for it. Somebody said, I was trying to make sense of it. So I'll give you a second to, I'll read it. Well, you know, why not? Have fun with it. And then we'll get this ugly slide off the screen. That the tax character of property acquired by a person from the estate of a decedent whose executor opted out of the estate tax regime is the same as it was in the hands of the decedent. Naturally, that's common knowledge. It's just understood that we don't have, that's why we're not going to focus on it, because everybody knows this. Okay, that's not the case. And that is not the planned giving that we are talking about today. No Internal Revenue Code, don't need it. Here's what we are talking a little bit more about. I sometimes call it get a finger, grab a hand fundraising, because we can learn from these and probably thousands of other iconic brands, not that this is transactional. No, third time, no, that's not what I'm saying. This is not transactional fundraising at all. It's relationships. But there's a parallel that we can glean from any one of these brands. Let's pick Celebrity Cruises. You book a cruise, you got your room. Is that the end of what they ask you to do? Don't they ask you to go further? Oh, you're just getting started when you have your room. You want to upgrade to a suite. You want the Wi-Fi package. You want the drink package. You want the bonus drink package that includes all the alcohol that the drink package doesn't include. You want the upgraded dining experiences. And the excursions, the scores of excursion, right? So that's the end of the parallel. Just that you're going to be talking to folks who are committed to your work, and it's questionable whether we're, the degree to which we're committed to any of these brands or any of the others you could think of. But you're going to be talking to folks who are committed to your brand, to your work, to your mission, and you're going to be asking them to take another step with you. And who are those folks that you are going to be talking to? They are your most loyal, committed donors. These are the folks who have been giving to you for a long, long time, for many of you, probably decades. And if your nonprofit hasn't been around for decades, again, not to be dismayed, just like if you have zero endowment, not to be dismayed. If you haven't been around for 20 years, 30, 40, 50 years, some of you, I imagine, they've been giving to you for a long time. So if your nonprofit is just 10 or 15 years, these are folks who've been giving to you for all those years, or maybe 12 of the 15, right? Long-term, loyal, committed donors. How do we know that? Because of their giving history. They've been giving to you for all those years. Sometimes many gifts in a year. So if you've got donors who've been giving to you for 15, 20 years, you might see 30 gifts in those 20 years. There are years when they make multiple gifts, and it's not uncommon. So we're looking for your most loyal, committed donors of that type. And I like to start the plan giving conversation with folks 55 to 60 and over. That's because that's the age range when people start thinking about their estate plan, their long-term plans as a method of giving back to the causes that have been important to them. And notice I didn't say that's when they start thinking about their long-term plans. Not at all. Should be decades before that, especially if they have children, to cover guardianship issues in their long-term plans. But as a method of giving back, that's roughly the age when people start thinking about their long-term plans in that way. Now, lots of you may not have age in your CRM database. A third reason not to be dismayed: you don't need age. If you have it, then use it when you're going back and looking for your best prospects. If you don't, just use the giving history as a proxy. That'll be fine. You're not at a disadvantage if you don't have age in your CRM database. Tony Martinetti is not saying that at all. Just use the giving consistency. And because we're embarking on a new venture in fundraising for most of us here, I like to see 100% participation on the board. I believe all the board members should have your nonprofit in their long-term plan. And again, we're talking about gifts and wills. I think everybody should have you in their will while they're on the board. What they do after they leave the board, that's a matter between them and their family. But while they're on the board, I like to see that 100% participation in a new fundraising initiative, as I think you would any other new fundraising strategy, platform, offering. Can I think of any other synonyms for strategy, platform, offering? Venture, there you go, the fourth one. I have two mandatory takeaways, only two, and I'm not even comfortable just calling them takeaway. No, mandatory takeaway. There's two things you gotta take away from today, and here is one of the two. That this is not only for your wealthy donors. Previous slide, your best prospects. Did I say anything about the size of those gifts that your donors have been making for years and many, many cases, decades? I did not. I don't care if those were $5 gifts. I don't care if their average giving is $5. I don't care if their lifetime giving history is $200 because they've made 45 gifts to you. I don't care. People who make small gifts to you over many, many years, and they're doing it loyally and consistently, and they're still doing it. I don't like to see lapsed, maybe 1 year lapsed, like 2022 maybe was their last gift, but I don't like to see lapsed. But those people who have been giving for decades, and those are small gifts, they are ideal prospects for a planned gift. They think about you so often. There's a very good chance that they wish they could give more, but they can't. They believe that they can't. Doesn't matter. Don't think that this is only for your wealthy donors, your board members, your major donors. You'd be making a big mistake and leaving a lot of money on the table if you're thinking that way. So please don't. How to get started? Charitable bequests. Charitable bequests, identical to gifts in wills. It's the same thing. They mean the exact same thing. We're talking about gifts in people's wills. This is the place to launch your planned giving. And there's a lot on this slide. That's because the keen-eyed among you will have noticed that the first letter of each bullet spells out our name's host. It's Brian Saber, immortalized on slide number 8. Brian Saber.
Look at that. I'm honored.
I think your honor is well placed. And here's where we're going to talk about the bonus for Gen Z, Gen X, and millennials as well. So that's why it's kind of a busy slide. I mean, if the guy's name was A.J. Smith, there'd be less on the slide. But he's named Brian Saber, so that's what we have to work with. And so the slide is a little busier than the A.J. Smith slide would be. Basically, it's so easy for your team and your donors. Why is that? That's because there are three things that are true of wills. Everybody knows what wills are. Everybody knows they need a will. And everybody knows how wills work. Those three things are in your favor. They mean you don't have to train your team about the nuances of charitable remainder unit trusts with net income makeup provision, which is a real thing that actually exists. I didn't just string a bunch of words together, that exists, but you don't have to train your team about it, and you don't have to spend precious marketing time and money educating your donors about the nuances of that thing, or any of the other more technical, more complicated, less universally understood planned gifts. Because everybody knows what wills are, everybody knows how wills work, and everybody knows they need a will that makes this easy for your team, easy for your donors. Revealed to you will be one out of seven gifts. All right, a little awkwardly worded, you know, but I had to work the R in. The guy's name is Brian, so we got to have an R. So revealed to you will be one out of seven gifts. That's because for every gift in a will that you find out about, that someone has told you, I put you in my will, there's another 7 to 8 who have also included you in their will, but it's just so private and so personal to them that they're not going to reveal it to you. No matter how many opportunities you give them, no matter how many checkoff boxes you may give them to say I've included you, they're just never going to tell you. So know that for every one you get, there's another 7 to 8 out there. Well, everyone that you know about, the person tells you while they're living, there's another 7 to 8 out there. Easily the most popular planned gift, and we're going through a bunch of the reasons why this is true. Expect at least 75% of all your planned gifts over all the decades that you're going to do planned giving, because today's Tuesday, you could, the way I lay this out, I think you could probably start with the conversations on Thursday or Friday. So for all the decades after Friday that you're doing planned giving, I assure you, at least 3/4, and I've seen as high as 90% of all of the planned gifts that you get are going to be these simple gifts and wills. So that's another reason it's the place to start. It's the low-hanging fruit. It's the most popular planned gift by far. And that applies too in any of those big league institutions I named, University of Minnesota, University of South Carolina, University of Texas, University of California. We'll pick one in the middle too, in the heartland, University of Missouri. Take a look at their planned giving programs. I assure you, at least 3/4 of all the gifts in their planned giving programs are these simple gifts and wills. The average charitable bequest in the U.S. is $35,000. I don't know if we have any listeners with us from Canada, but I would imagine it's equal or even higher. Canadians are at least as generous as Americans, if not more. So I'd be comfortable using that number in Canada as well, if there's any of our northern neighbors with us. $35,000 average charitable bequest. Now look back at the giving history to be amazed. I'm looking at a one-dimensional screen sometimes with a nonprofit that I'm working with, and we find out someone has included us, and you look back at the giving history, I still get chills. My synesthesia kicks in, even though I'm looking at a one-dimensional screen, to see the consistency. It's amazing. The consistency, the loyalty over decades. And of course we know those are not major gifts necessarily, right? Mandatory takeaway number one, not just for your major donors. So it's just, I still get chills looking at those giving histories. Surely, you're most likely to get cash. This is a little a statement for you to perhaps share with some of the naysayers. You know, I'm not a fan of naysayers by any stretch. I channel them like, oh, no, we can't do planned giving. Oh, you're going to ruin us because we're going to get left. You know what people are going to leave us in their wills? Junk cars. That's what we're going to get. A bunch of junk cars. And we're not going to know what to do with them. Oh, you crummy naysayer. No, I've been doing this for 27 years, since 1997. 98%, maybe 99%, but I'll be a little conservative. I'll say 98%. Of all the gifts I've seen over 27 years are the most valuable, the easiest to deal with, the most desirable, the simplest gifts of cash. You're very unlikely to see anything other than a gift of cash in wills. So cut those naysayers' arguments off at the knees. don't cut the naysayers off. I'm not advocating violence against naysayers as much as I dislike them, but don't cut the naysayers off their knees. Cut their naysaying arguments off at the knees. Just make that clear. Violence against their arguments, not against them and the person. No, no. So give some cash. That's what you're going to get. Don't worry about the 1 or maybe 2%. It just doesn't happen. At times, you can ask for documentation, next bullet, but most times I wouldn't. Documentation, you know, you can have a non-binding form that says, my current intention today, and I understand this is not legally binding upon me or my will or my estate, is to leave you a gift in my will. And optionally, if they want to share the amount, you know, they could do that optionally if they want to. You know, maybe, you know, if your nonprofit really needs it, you know, if it's part of the culture and like your board insists or your CEO insists, it's probably not worth having an argument over. But most cases, I counsel, just take the person's word. They pull you aside. You're having a meeting. They check a box. I've included you in my will. Warm embrace. Pick up the phone. Effusive thanks, if it's a check box, of course. If you're talking to the person over lunch, don't go to your phone and then call them. Just say it directly over the lunch table. Thank you so much. Effusive thanks. We're grateful. These long-term gifts mean the world to us, which we're going to get to in the last bullet, what the long-term gifts mean for us. So most times I would not ask for the documentation. That's my advice. It's erroneous to think you must recruit a lawyer. Yeah, you don't need an expert. You don't. You don't. You can do this. Simple gifts and wills. And you never have to go beyond the wills if you don't want to. 15 years from now, you're doing planned giving and you're still only promoting charitable bequests, gifts and wills. Yeah, that guy, Tony Martinetti, 15 years ago, he said we don't have to go beyond. And you don't. If you want to, you can. There are other valuable planned gifts. Yeah. And I work with them, but you don't need to. That's the point. Please take that away. You don't ever have to. You can have an enormously successful planned giving program just doing gifts by wills. And really, what is the conversation about? And here's our bonus for the folks who may fear of talking about this with people who are their parents' ages or their grandparents' ages. You know, I'm just not comfortable talking about this. Well, as I've alluded to, this is not a conversation about death. The conversation is about life, the life of your nonprofit, the sustainability of your mission, your values, all your work. And that's what you have in common with the folks that you're talking to about planned giving, because you're talking to folks who are your most loyal, committed donors. You know they love your work. You love your work. You have your work in common. That's what the conversation is about. How important it is for your community, however you define community, might be a local community, town, state, province, the nation, however you define community, whatever community your work impacts, how important your work is to that community 20, 30 years from now. How important it is that that work continue. That's what the conversation is all about. It's a conversation about what you have in common with your most loyal, committed donors, the sustainability of your work. Hopefully that allays any concerns about talking to older folks about planned giving. And we know now it's not a death conversation. Again, it's a conversation about life, the life of your nonprofit. That's what the conversation is about. Mandatory takeaway number 2, I already kind of revealed this a little bit. You can have a very respectable planned giving program only promoting charitable bequests, gifts and wills forever. You don't ever have to go beyond gifts and wills because look, they're 75% minimum. And I've seen as high as 90%. But let's take the 75, the more conservative. If you did go beyond planned giving, beyond gifts and wills, they'd end up being 75% of all the planned gifts you'd get anyway. So you're not leaving that much on the table if you never go beyond charitable bequests.
Tony?
Yes, sir.
We got a question from James. How popular are planned gifts in insurance policies?
James, insurance can be a valuable planned gift. It's not that common. It's not too difficult, but it takes education, and most people just don't think about planned giving. Sorry, don't think about life insurance as a planned gift. So it can be a valuable planned gift. I'm not dismissing it, but they're not very common. And James, thank you for that segue because we're going to talk some about coming up about what some of the other planned gifts are if you did. If you did go further.
And
If
then,
I just want to put a capital on the, maybe I should capital I and capital F. Big if you decide to go further. We're going to breeze through some of the other types of planned gifts because it is called Planned Giving 101. But yes, go ahead, Brian.
just a question from Flora might be more appropriate at the end, but I want to throw it out here. She wants to know if you could touch on DAFs, donor advised funds.
Let's do it at the end.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So living trusts, that's a it's a type of trust. It's not a charitable trust, but you could be a beneficiary. You could be a death beneficiary of someone's living trust. IRA rollover, it's commonly called the rollover, but it's technically it's the qualified charitable distribution. That's for donors who are 70 and a half and over. They can make an immediate gift from their IRA, from their traditional IRA to your nonprofit. The financial asset beneficiary, that's any of the financial assets, including going to James's question about it, life insurance. You could be the beneficiary of a life insurance policy, but there are lots of other financial assets, like sometimes brokerage accounts, even some checking and savings accounts have death clauses, payable on death, and you could be a beneficiary in that respect to any of those types of financial assets. IRAs also, you could be a beneficiary of of someone's IRA. Also 401ks, pensions. If you decide to go further still, there are something called charitable gift annuities. These are a method of giving income for life to the donor and maybe one other person. And then at their death, what remains in the charitable gift annuity is a gift to your nonprofit. But lots of state regulations around those. Charitable remainder trusts, also lifetime income, or it could be income for a number of years, and then at the donor's death, what remains would go to your nonprofit. Charitable lead trust, that's where the income is actually coming to your nonprofit. And then typically at the donor's death, or it could be a number of years, what remains goes back to the donor's family. Or to the donor themselves. That those are rare because the person is sacrificing income. Income right now is going to your nonprofit, and most people can't afford to sacrifice income. Most of us are trying to increase income. So those are quite rare. Those are for wealthy donors. And the retained life estate, that's a method of giving real estate so that when the person dies at the real estate comes to you. Okay, so here's where we are so far. What and why, who the best prospects are. Of course, you want to be making sure you're talking to the right folks, how to get started, and that hopefully overcoming fears of folks in Gen Z, X, or millennials who are concerned about talking to older folks about this, hopefully allayed some of those concerns. Because we now know that and understand that it's a conversation about life. Some marketing ideas for you before we get to the continuing ed and then the Q&A. I hope you are putting your cues in the cue block, please, as Brian is curating them, and we will get to them. A few speaking points in your remarks, whether you're drafting the remarks or making the remarks. It's very simple. Sort of, use the speaking points that I mentioned earlier about what this conversation is all about. We're focusing on the long term, how important it is that our work continue for the community in the long term. You all know, you're all here at the event. You understand how important our work is. We're focusing on long-term gifts now to make sure that our work continues. And specifically, we're looking for and encouraging gifts in people's wills. And if you're interested in that, you could speak to Brian, at the end of the event, Brian is in the back right now. He's not that he's not a mingler, but you know, I'm the speaker and I'm speaking, so Brian is in the back waiting, and then he's having a drink back there, but he'll be mingling shortly, and you can speak to him about how important gifts in wills are to us. He's having a glass of, I know he's having a glass of, in the back, he's having a glass of
Riuniti.
Of course. Riuniti. Of course, yeah. He doesn't need the Ridge because Ridge is more than $9 a bottle. So he's getting the Riuniti, the Matus. I don't know, maybe myself. Does anybody remember Matus? That was the one, it was, it came in a faux wicker basket. It was like glued to the bottom of the bottle. Does anybody remember Matus?
Okay. Very fancy.
Cheap. We're talking cheap wine, like $4 a bottle. The next step down from that would be mouthwash. It would be the next wine level down from Matus Rosé. And a sidebar in your program. If you're doing a sidebar, if you're doing a program for your event, sidebar. I'm a big fan of sidebars. Like in 40 or 50 words, you can say it all. You don't need a full page in the program. A little sidebar. Around the same remarks, you know, around the remarks that I just mentioned about the importance of long-term gifts, encouraging gifts and wills, and, you know, here's a contact person. But we know that that contact person is not going to be having technical wills conversations. They're going to be talking about the importance of the sustainability of your work. That's what the conversation is going to be about with that contact person. Sidebars or articles, again, I'm a big fan of sidebars, 50 words, you can say it all. Hopefully you don't get tasked to write a 300-word article in newsletters or annual report, you know, whatever print channels you've got, your annual report, if you're recognizing your other donors for their different giving levels in your annual report, of course, your planned giving donors deserve that same recognition in the annual report, and you're inviting others to join them, naturally. For digital, again, sidebars or articles in whatever e-newsletter, whatever digital channels you've got. Simple page on your website. Please avoid the calculators, the encyclopedias, you know, those $500 a quarter. You rent the website, supposed to look like yours. It does look like yours, but everybody knows to look in the address bar and they know it's not your website. You don't need encyclopedias on planned giving and life income calculators and tax calculators because you're starting simple. You're starting with charitable bequests, gifts and wills. You don't need complicated web pages that go on for scores and scores of pages. So what do you need? A page, maybe two, pull quote, testimonial, right, from a donor or donor couple maybe who's done this, included you in their will, about how simple it was, about why they did it, because they love your work so much. Maybe a photo of the donor or the donor couple. I would put some sentences in about the importance of your work, how important sustainability is around your mission. And then a contact person. And we know that contact person is having the kinds of conversations that are easy to have because they're talking about what's in common with your donors, your work, and its sustainability. And a simple suggestion for email signatures, just throw it in. It's easy to include us in your will. So simple. And maybe you could link that to the one page, the plan giving page on your website. So there's some low lift marketing ideas for you. Direct mail, buck slip. Now I'm envisioning here direct mail that's not devoted to planned giving because we're talking low lift, low cost. So it's some other purpose to the package, but you put a buck slip in. Buck slip is a third of a page. So they're printed three on a page. They get cut and you're directing, you're depositing a third of a page into the package. Third of a page. What does that look like? Looks like a sidebar.
Tony, your voice just went out. Tony.
Repurpose the sidebar from all those other sidebars that you did. Same one, you drop it in, third of a page, does not increase, you post the paper in. For self-selection checkoff. Brian, yes? What?
Oh, we couldn't hear you for a second.
I think, must have been a sneeze. Use your reply envelope flaps for.
Can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I don't know if anyone, it could just be me having that issue. I am hardwired, but. If anyone is having a blip hearing, Tony,
let Brian know. Okay. Let them know in the questions. Okay. I'm going to continue, Brian. All right. I hope folks can hear. Can they? All right. Brian? All right, I'm going to continue on the hope that folks can hear. That last suggestion is, next time you do a bulk order of envelopes, then a reply envelopes, these are envelopes that come back to you, not the BREs with the postage indicia on it, because the post office won't allow this, but other reply envelopes that are not business reply envelopes, BREs, coming back to you with pre-addressed to your office. On the flap, put a little check off that someone can check a box that says, send me information about including your organization's name in my will, a little check off. And of course you save those envelopes and you've got some prospects. I'm hoping folks can still hear me. Okay, I don't have a message. I don't have any texts from Brian. So I'm assuming, I'm going to continue assuming that everything is okay. I don't have any messages from Brian. Okay. So here's what we've seen. Now a little on the continuing ed side and then the Q&A. If you're a book reader, I recommend this book, Plan to Giving Simplified. I don't know if it's in... it's in digital format because it's kind of old, but it's a very good book and it's still current. Plan giving doesn't change that much. And this keeps it at a simplified level, so basic level. So that's, it's, I think it's very appropriate. I do have a free how-to guide, Unleash the Game-Changing Power of Plan Giving at Your Nonprofit. If you snap that QR code, it'll go into more detail about some of the things I've talked about today. Free PDF download using that code. And Plan Giving Accelerator, that is a class that I run online. The next class starts in March. It goes for just 3 months, March, April, May. So we'll be done by the end of May. No impinging on your summer plans. And I will guide you step by step each week how to launch Planned Giving at your nonprofit. We meet once an hour, once a week, for an hour on Zoom in a meeting format, not a webinar format, meeting. So there's lots of crosstalk, lots of peer support. Folks get to know each other over the 12 weeks and get very comfortable. That's been amazing to see folks come together and help each other. No homework, week to week. You take the course and you can execute it at your own pace. These remarkable outcomes are all from small and mid-sized shops. That's who the Plan Giving Accelerator is for. The 4.8 million is a small humane society in Georgia. The five board gifts, that was outside Chicago, a social service agency outside Chicago, and the $2 million was in Oregon, a community development agency in Oregon. So we've had some very good outcomes from the class. There are others, but I'm just sampling. And if you use code Brian1200 there, you will save $1,200 off the tuition this month, February, because the class starts early March. So you can use that Brian1200 code. Get $1,200 off, and all the info is at plannedgivingaccelerator.com. Brian, are you with me? Do we have any questions? Well, in the hopes that folks can still hear me, maybe I just can't hear you. I'm sorry, I can't do the questions. I can't hear. I'm not even sure. I can't hear and I don't see any of the questions. So I will just thank you. Thanks very much for being with us. I hope this has been valuable. Allay concerns about planned giving, help you see how simple planned giving can be when you launch it the right way with gifts and wills. Thanks.